Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Happy Friday. Yeah, you made it. 6:12 now. And we'll get to the top six and six in a second. I want to remind you, Lou's first call is your chance to ask questions about your life, about love, finance. All right, no, just a bunch of crap going around your house, really. That's his area of expertise. And do we have any staff questions today? You guys take inventory personally? Figure out if you have any staff questions about your house.
I have so many.
Well, we'll have to limit you to three or four or five. Okay. Or one. We've got a kid on. We want you to meet here in a little bit. Peter Roskam, the congressman, will be on. I assume he's happy about the health care vote in the House. We'll honor Mike Mathis and welcome him to the Walk of Fame. Dave, that's your job to welcome him because the rest of us aren't in. Yet.
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 The operative word.
We're campaigning heavily. Avik Roy will be on later. I don't know anybody who's more skilled in discussing health care than he is. Willie Geist from NBC. He's talking to the co-founders of Instagram this weekend on Sunday today. And he'll be on. Who am I missing? I think that's pretty much everybody, right?
And
Paula Poundstone. Paula Poundstone will be on after 9 o'clock. Paula Poundstone, one of the top comedians in the country for the last 75 years.
She's been around a long time. She's great.
She has been around a long time. All right, so let's do the top six at six.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
I tweeted this out last night. Basically, what happened yesterday is you're the husband if you're the House of Representatives, and you're the Senate. If you're the Senate, you're the wife. And what happened yesterday was you've been saying you clean the garage. You promised you clean the garage. Eventually, you clean the garage, but you sort of do a half-assed job on it just so you can go, hey, I cleaned the garage.
Right.
And then the wife goes, oh, I'll fix it, and then goes and cleans it her way. So the wife is the Senate. The husband's a house. What happened yesterday means nothing because the Senate gets the bill and they have to do what they have to do. They'll send something back to the House. It won't die in the Senate because Mitch McConnell, my favorite guy, is in charge of the Senate, and he will send something back to the House. But it won't look a lot like the bill that's there now, the one that came out of the House yesterday.
I love that analogy, by the way.
Sums it up, right?
Very true.
Yeah. Republicans were high-fiving each other and had themselves a little beer and pizza party with the president yesterday. Democrats then went, that's a campaign ad, that's a campaign ad, that's a campaign ad, as they all gear up for next year's congressional turnover in the House. There's also a lot of Senate seats that are up and, you know, governor's races as well. And all of this relates to 1/6 of the American economy, which is health care. A handful of Republican senators signaled they would work on a new version. A handful of Republican senators said they would not work on this version, and a bunch of Democrats said, not a chance. So the Democrats will get to work on it right after. What are they on now, 11-week vacation, 12-week vacation? They need a break.
I was really surprised yesterday by that visual. I mean, you just basically, like you said, gave the Democrats all of these campaign commercials. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Well, because the leader of the pack vroom is a guy who doesn't understand the process. I don't even know if somebody took Trump aside and said, hey, the Senate's got to vote on it. What? Let's do this. President Trump thrilled yesterday, headed home to New York for the... Did you know it's the first time he's gone back to New York since he was inaugurated?
How about that?
Yeah, so Melania apparently said, one visit. That's it.
One visit every 103 days.
Come see Barron and get out.
Yeah.
He dined with Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull of Australia and trying to smooth out their relationship. Remember, that was one of the first phone calls.
Mm-hmm. He hung up on him?
Yeah, on Saturday we hung up on him. One of our best allies for 100 years. Oh, Donnie. A death row inmate freed with Northwestern University students' help is missed a deposition in a suit arguing that he was a real killer. Remember the Anthony Porter story?
Oh, yeah.
Former death row inmate, one of the most controversial wrongful conviction cases in Illinois history, didn't show up at his scheduled deposition.
Unbelievable.
Doesn't seem wise. That was in a lawsuit this week alleging he was a real killer all along. What sort of legal issues will have because of this remain to be seen? Uber, the subject of a federal inquiry into a software tool called Grayball. It's used to deceive regulators in markets where it's not permitted to operate, kind of make Uber more stealth. The Times reported on the practice in March. Uber has had nothing but trouble in 2017 for a company that just had it all going on. Seems to not be able to get out of its own way now, including a CEO who has several legal issues involved and a video floating around where he's screaming at one of his own drivers. Jay Cutler.
Yay.
Let's go live to Dave on this. Jay Cutler's going to be a broadcaster?
Well, apparently he's looking into the opportunity because the opportunities to quarterback a National Football League team, at least in a main role, have been limited, if existent at all.
Do we know if he got any offers from anybody?
We don't really know that. I mean, I'm sure he'd go somewhere and be a backup, but I don't think anybody's been breaking down his door to start at quarterback. Can't understand
well,
why.
He's so personable. He's so personable and happy and camera friendly.
I love former athletes who, or even current athletes who are thinking about becoming
As a last resort, I can always just do that.
I can always go in the booth and be a broadcaster. Because I've spent my whole career being so verbose and so chatty and charming and witty.
Hey, you know all you guys that I treated really poorly?
Yeah.
I'd like you to pay me now.
Exactly.
So anyway, good luck, Jay. We're all pulling for you. And then finally tonight, Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell got a dual induction into the Walk of Fame.
I saw that. It was so cute. And Kate Hudson, did you see, gave the speech when they were being inducted?
And then in the middle of it, did she plug Fabletics?
No. But she said, I always thought I would be giving this speech at their wedding. And then proceeded to talk about, you know, how they met and how they're in love and blah, blah, blah. And she said, but I don't think that's going to happen in our near future or ever.
You know, she calls Kurt Dad.
Yeah.
It's nice.
It is. It was a cute ceremony.
Yeah. So good for them. And Goldie Hawn, did you see the Amy Schumer's dad video? Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn are in a new movie, and Amy Schumer's dad, I'm not sure he has a particular ailment of some kind, but is in love with Goldie Hawn, and he was crying when he met her.
Oh.
So.
Reese Witherspoon spoke yesterday, too, and said Goldie Hawn inspired her, and she started to cry, too.
Well, let's all cry.
I know.
Let's all cry for Goldie Hawn.
Goldie Hawn took ballet lessons with my sister.
What?
We'll come back with details on that because we're not going to do that story in 10 seconds. Let's go to Mary with traffic first, and then Lou will do your Mr. Fix-It stuff. First caller.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show for Lou's First Call.
And Brandon will be Lou's First Call in just a second. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Doing fine. How are things at Channel 9 this morning?
I don't know. I just got here.
Okay. All right, then. Just fine. You know how I know it's spring?
Why?
In my neighborhood yesterday, I saw one of the annual rites of spring. The first argument between a husband and wife about something they were doing outside together. Oh. That's how you know it's spring.
Oh, man. Yep.
The first time a husband and wife go outside and say, let's work together on the lawn, or let's work together on this or that, and an argument starts. That's how you know we've changed seasons.
Yeah. I've told the story before. My wife and I were a young married couple, you know, and here, I'm pretty handy around the house.
That's what I hear.
She's a home builder. And she said, well, when we buy our house, you'll handle everything in the house, and I will do all the gardening. I'm like, oh, all right, that's cool. Never happened.
Not one time?
Not one time. Maybe once. Then I was in charge of it all.
But that's okay.
And she's in charge of everything else, and there's no way my life does anything without her. So it worked out perfectly for me.
Listen, I met your wife.
Yes.
She's the best. My favorite Lou Manfredini saying for I've known you, what, 15, 20 years
now? Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Never known me, as my friends say, they've never known me happier.
That's right.
She's great. She's great. And you're way over your skis on this.
Way over my skis.
You still have a chance of blowing it any given day, so work harder.
She reminds me.
Yeah.
She goes, good luck with that.
At 6:20. Yeah, not funny. At 6:25, Brandon is standing by on the phone. Brandon may be standing near a brook. Where are you right now, Brandon?
On my way to work.
And what's work for you, Brandon?
I work for a subcontractor at ComEd.
Okay, we're going to need you to be a little more awake when you get there. I don't want you plugging stuff into the wrong sockets.
Right.
All right, what's your question for Lou?
Basically, my yard is full of dandelions, and I sprayed a couple days ago, and now it is, like, there's a bunch of brown spots and everything, basically where everything died off, and my question is, what's the best way for me to get grass back? Like, can I just plant it, and then am I able to mow over it, or what do I need to
do? He's got brown spots, Lou. What does he do?
Yeah. So if the weed killer was effective in killing that broadleaf dandelion, what I would tell you to do is I'd rake everything up, you know, this weekend, rake up as much as you can to lose all that dandelion and kind of loosen up the soil a little bit. Then I'd like you to put down some type of soil amender too. Remember that weeds like acidic soil. And while you have the weed killer that'll kill everything you have, you need to make sure that you prepare the soil so that it doesn't come back. You can put some lime down. There's a company called Nature's Best that makes this organic soil amender that you can put down there, Dave Thompson's Nature's Best. And you can put that down, then go ahead and put grass seed over the top with a little bit of topsoil. And by changing the soil chemistry and adding the seed, you're going to have a beautiful lawn by the 4th of July.
That's a pretty good deal. Beautiful lawn by the 4th of July. He'll take that. Brandon, by the way, gets the April Air Wi-Fi thermostat, allowing you to adjust the temperature of your home's air on your smartphone. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers, home of the 60-Minute Man, 855-955-HVAC. Any whiny staff questions? Let's go to Dave.
Well, this is related to that last question, because I've got these broadleaf weeds all over my flower beds. I haven't even planted flowers yet, Lou. But they're just all over the place now. I want to spray, but I'm afraid of. I do have hostas coming up in some of them.
Careful, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to kill them. So how do you work around the plants that get rid of the weeds?
So with the broadleafs, what's nice about those is, you know, there's a obviously Roundup is the name in Weed Killer, and that actually they have a very precise sprayer that you can buy. That you go right over the weed and give it just a little spritz. You don't have to go crazy. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is that the Roundup, the way it's designed, is it gets absorbed through the leaves and goes all the way down to the root and kills it. So that little spot treatment, if you did it now before you planted, because you're not going to plant till the way this temperature is, everybody talks about Mother's Day, but it's, in my opinion, still too soon. I'd probably wait till at least the middle of May.
I'd wait till Labor Day, just to be safe.
Right. And then if you do that now, like this weekend, Dave, the following weekend, if all of a sudden, you know, your wife decides it's time for you to plant, then you're ready to go.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. And will that work on buckthorn?
It will, but you have to keep doing it.
Okay.
Andre, question?
My buckthorn is exploding.
He tried a preemptive strike, and it didn't work.
It did not work.
Didn't know he had a follow-up.
Lou, real quick, I know this is probably an easy fix, but my bedroom door frame is coming apart from the wall. Not from slamming it so much, but can I just take a hammer and re-nail that in? Or
What the hell's been going on in that room?
Yeah, wow.
All right, now come on. I knew you guys were going to say that. Yeah. But do I have to put a sealant behind it or anything?
No. If it's an interior door, and it's, I mean, the thing is if it's loosening up for whatever reason there, you probably need some longer fasteners, whether it's screws or nails, to anchor into the framing of it. You can tap it back into place, but it doesn't make sense that that's occurring. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it was not installed properly initially. So a couple extra long nails, but you just have to be careful when you start banging them in there. You may actually take the frame out of square, so you have to be very careful with that.
I've often thought that. The Bear writes, Lou, where can I get a left-handed screwdriver? All right, Bear. Okay, we saw that coming. 630.
We sell them at the Ace.
I have a truss roof, and I was wondering, do I need any walls underneath Atherton? I don't know what this means. Atherton, I open up the whole room. That's apparently something that needed a spell check.
I mean, if you have truss roof, there's initially when that's installed and in design, there's bearing points for that. So even though it could be what's called a clear span going from one wall to another, there may be a load bearing point in the middle of that truss. So you cannot just remove a wall without ascertaining if in fact those trusses need support, or that roof is going to sag and collapse.
Well, that would be a bad development.
That would be a bad development, yeah.
All right, so I hope everyone's learned something here. I was pausing to let people learn.
Oh.
Yeah, I was hoping they'd learn something.
Take it in.
And I would invite you, as soon as you're done on TV, to turn the show back on.
Because I always do.
At some point in the next 60 minutes, I'm hoping we can get this in, Dave's sister took ballet lessons with Goldie Hawn, and we haven't gotten to the story yet.
Really? I don't really know much more. Because
like recently?
I was a little... No, this was way back.
Oh, because I just saw Goldie Hawn. She looks fantastic.
Yeah, see, no, yeah.
I mean, not in person. I saw her on TV.
Yeah.
Was that before Laughing?
Way before.
Oh. All right, now don't get ahead of the story here. We don't
really know
up.
Much the
Wait,
story.
Did she say sock it to me at all?
All right, at 6:30, want to thank Lou for being on. Sponsored by American Weathermakers. And we're coming back with the big story next.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
641, we continue with show number 898. By my math, that means next Tuesday will be the 900th show. And we'll do our traditional huge, huge, huge deal. Your cake going to be ready by then, Mary?
What day?
All right, so Tuesday, the big 900th show party.
Okay. Tuesday. Yeah. This Tuesday?
Yeah, this coming Tuesday. Did we ever do anything for John DeCosta's birthday?
No. We should do
We should do a combination 900th show John DeCosta birthday party.
Yes.
Is he coming in Tuesday?
Yeah, we'll see.
And then we can all jump out of Mary's cake.
And we could all jump out of Mary's cake. Speaking of things that are going to make you jump out of a cake. What? Have we all done our videos now to show how you can enter and you can be a part of the big karaoke? Have we?
I did mine yesterday. What? It's not very good.
It's not judgment. What? Jake? Why didn't you give it to me?
I have it. I can send it.
You know you're the
I'm
last
I'm going to be judged.
One.
I know I have it on my phone.
You're
Andrea,
the last
mine
one.
Was terrible.
No, Andrea. Just send it. No, Steve Grzanich.
What's with Grzanich? Oh, Grzanich, I'm sorry. Grzanich couldn't be here at this time because Starbucks is open.
I'm going to show, you know, I'm going to get the opinion of Mary Sandberg Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, because she'll be direct, not judgmental. She'll be direct and say either
did
it sucks.
Did you see mine?
Or, no. Was it really bad?
I'm singing The Wheels on the Bus for Abigail.
Oh, see, that's cute, though. Just, mine has a weird reflection.
Dave, one take, no waiting. How many takes did you do?
I did a few.
I did one.
Have you seen
like
mine?
Six.
One take. I saw yours. Yours was very dramatic. It's very dramatic. It's moving.
Really?
Do you think Dave's? If you think Dave's would be worse than mine, I'll just turn it in.
It's not a contest.
No, it's just we're just trying to show people who are listening how they can enter the contest.
Oh, it's always a contest.
Mine was terrible. I heard a good song and I just said, okay, I'll turn the phone
on. All right, here's what I'm going to do because you procrastinate at a level that's Olympic level. Okay,
I know.
So here's what I'm going to do.
It's on my phone.
Here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
If you don't have this done by noon today, you're not in. You're going to be kicked out of the video. Kicked out.
All right, I'll just submit what I have, even though I don't think it's my best work.
At 6:43, Jake Abrams standing by. You know, whenever we have good news on a Friday, we like to kick a weekend off with a little bit of it, and Jake joins us now. Good morning, Jake. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing fine. You're a senior at Highland Park?
Yes, I am.
What are you going to do next year?
I am going to study at Brown University.
Oh, you slacker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's great. Ivy Leaguer.
Thank you. Yeah.
You know what you're going to study?
Hopefully entrepreneurship. That's the goal.
And what do you want to be an entrepreneur in? How do you want to change the world, Jake style?
That's the best part about entrepreneurship. It's never really something you can plan on.
You can figure it out later. Are you excited?
Yeah, couldn't be more excited.
Got any friends going to Brown?
There's not many kids from the North Shore of Chicago going. There's a few, but
going to be a whole new start, man.
Meet kids there. Yeah.
Well, I wish you nothing but luck. Jake started a petition on change.org called Chicago 2 School. Chicago, the number 2 school. You can search it at change.org. Tell us what the petition's about.
So the petition is advocating for free transportation to and from school for low-income high school CPS students.
In other words, eliminating another excuse for people not to get their kids to school,
exactly.
For kids not to get to school. The ride would be free. How would we accomplish it?
Well, there's currently legislation in place. There's a Senate bill, Senate Bill 633, that has been filed and has been passed already through the State Senate Transportation Committee, which is very exciting because now the next step is waiting to hear from the State Senate to see if it passes through them. But this all just started off as an initiative that didn't have much behind it. It was a research project that I had just dug deeper into. So it's really exciting to see.
But you now have a bill that has passed through the Senate. Has the House looked at it yet?
It has to go through the Senate first, I believe.
Because that's where the bill started. It can start in either branch, right?
Yeah.
So then it goes to the House. So let me just say to my good friend Mike Madigan, this is a bill that the House needs to take up and run with now, and then you can dance with the headline that you were a part of Jake's initiative, Jake Abrams, Highland Park High School senior, soon to be a Brown freshman, who is trying to get another excuse off the books so CPS kids can get to school on time and get the education they need and deserve.
Exactly, yeah. It was kind of just one of those common sense things that the more you look into, the more you see how clear it is. And I always took for granted the bright yellow school bus that shuttles me to school.
Right. Everybody has one, right?
Yeah, exactly. And to hear that there were students that are forced to pay hundreds of dollars a year, especially the kids and the students that need it most, just didn't make sense.
Makes no sense at all.
Jake is also, this is not your first rodeo. Talk about Born to Be Tees.
Yeah, so Born to Be Tees was a nonprofit business that sold baby onesies with cute catchphrase slogans and designs, advocating for different social issues. For example, the onesie that was for climate change said, "Change my diaper, not my climate." So it was different things like that. And I did that with my sister and a group of friends, and that's an awesome experience. And
of course, the irony there, Jake, is some diapers can't damage the ozone layer.
that is true.
Yes.
Well,
you got a lot going on, man.
Yeah. I'm a busy guy, but, I mean, hard work pays off, especially when it comes down to these things.
I agree, and I'm impressed by you. So I hope you'll keep it up, and I hope you'll check in from Brown occasionally. And call me if you need money.
Okay. I'll reach out.
Can we call Jake if we need money?
No, not yet, but eventually I bet you'll be able to do that.
All right, good.
In a few years.
I might.
I need some time with that one.
Listen, you didn't ask for this, but I'm going to give you an App gift card anyway, just for doing good things in the world. Go over to App and pick yourself something up. That's appdabt.com.
Thank you very much for that.
All right, hold on, bud. That's Jake. Just changing the world.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I think we'll get it through. The Republicans are very united, like seldom before. I mean, you see that today. The Republicans came together all of a sudden 2 days ago. It was like magic. They're very, very united. You saw that today, and you'll see it again.
All right, 6:53 now as we continue. Congressman Peter Roskam standing by. And, Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Steve, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you coming on. All right, so there's a lot of people that are very nervous about what you guys in the House did yesterday. What do you tell them today to make them less nervous?
So people should be nervous about where we were. And, yeah, I think this is one of these bills where the more you look at it, the better off you realize we are. So here's the thing. The status quo is not working. If you're in my congressional district, if you're in McHenry, Lake, or Kane County, and you're in the individual market, you only have one choice. There's only one insurance company. If you're in Iowa, yesterday it was announced 94, 95 counties have no coverage if you're into the individual market. So it's collapsing. So here's what we did. We said, look, let's protect people with pre-existing conditions explicitly in this bill, and let's go at the cost drivers that are making insurance so expensive. Let's go back to where there was a national consensus when President Obama was elected back in 2008, dealing with cost drivers and pre-existing conditions. Let's fix that problem, because where we are under the status quo of the ACA is not working. We've got to change, and we need the courage to change, and that's what this is all about.
The problems that come up include the provisions for mental health care. We live in an era where opioid addiction has never been worse. And when it starts killing celebrities like Prince, then people start to pay attention. I have no tolerance or patience for anybody that wants to have a discussion that mental health shouldn't be covered to the fullest extent of any insurance plan, like every other health condition is, because it's just as serious, if not more so. This bill gives states the opportunity, if waivers are filed, to go and employ large employers to go with other state plans that could first and foremost cut out something that is a little more expensive, like mental health addiction. Do you want the Senate to make changes in things like that to make it more viable and more fair and, frankly, more humane?
I think that I take your point, and I agree with you that mental health parity is essential. So here's the thing. The only way that a state can get a waiver. So number one, the law presumes mental health parity, and it presumes pre-existing conditions. That's the explicit language of the law. The only way that a state is able to apply for a waiver, here's what they've got to do. They've got to demonstrate that they're reducing premiums for health coverage in the state. They've got to recognize, or they've got to also increase enrollment in health insurance in the state. They've got to stabilize the market. They've got to stabilize premiums for individuals with pre-existing conditions, and they've got to increase choice plans in the state. So what's good for the state of Illinois, I think in our state we have a consensus on mental health as something that deserves parity with any other condition. But if another state wants to approach this in a different way, they've got to be able to do it. Because here's the thing, Steve, if you have no coverage, if you're in a county, let's say in Iowa, where in the individual market, they say, we're gone. We're not here.
Listen, Congressman. I get that, and I understand that, and you're absolutely right. And Republicans and Democrats, even the few who have addressed this, are right. Your card is meaningless that you carry around in your wallet if you don't have coverage. Having said that, legislation doesn't account for market conditions, and legislation doesn't account for a business's individual agendas and needs. And sometimes legislation has to control those businesses from not having those needs outweigh the good of the employees they're allegedly applying benefits to. I don't know that this does that.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. So that's why the ability to keep somebody out of a marketplace, the ability to say, we're not going to offer you coverage, that's gone. Lifetime caps, that's gone. So this is not the Wild West. This is with well thought out protections, but that are trying to do something. And the protections are there in place. But to your point, look, this has got to be a balanced view. We've got to get these healthcare costs under control. So think about a physician friend of mine in Wheaton who told me about a patient who was in his examining room, and he said, Peter, she was weeping in my examination room. She described a $7,500 deductible that she and her family don't have. This is a young mom. So she really has, when it comes down to it, does she have an insurance card? Yeah, she's got an insurance card. But is there health care on the other side of that insurance card? In her case, really incredibly limited. So remember, the critics are the same people who said, oh, if you like your coverage, you can keep it. If you like your doctor, you can keep it. And everybody's going to save $2,500 a year. All turned out to be pumping sunshine. None of that turned out to be true. So let's learn those lessons. Let's take the things from the Affordable Care Act that we like, that is pre-existing conditions protection, that is having kids who are 26 on their parents' coverage, and that is no lifetime caps. But let's get at these cost drivers. Let's unlock this thing, give people an advanceable, refundable tax credit that says you get to pick the coverage that you want. You don't have to go onto Medicaid if you don't want to.
So, Congressman, just to be clear, though, pre-existing conditions are covered, and if you're under the current plan, you can keep your doctor or go out of network. It becomes a choice.
So, bottom line, pre-existing conditions are covered. Let me just read you two sentences out of the exact language of the bill. No limiting access to coverage for individuals with pre-existing conditions. Nothing in this act shall be construed as permitting health insurance insurers to limit access to health coverage for individuals with pre-existing conditions.
But the waivers, state waivers could come into play in those cases, and then the high-risk pools come back.
Right. So you've got to make sure that if you're a state and you're proposing, look, we can do this better. Let's say Florida says, look, we've got a different demographic. And the citizens of Florida, through their legislature and governor, say, we propose to do this a different way. They shouldn't be limited to the same sort of one-size-fits-all approach. They should be able to go and apply for a waiver. And I mentioned earlier the conditions of those waivers. So I think that we've got to recognize one size doesn't fit all. And if there's more interesting ways to do this, let's find them out. But here's what we agree on. We agree that cost drivers are irrational. And they are, you know, healthcare, notwithstanding the passage of the Affordable Care Act, healthcare has continued to go up really significantly. So we've got to get at those things. Look, putting more people on Medicaid, what does that do for us? You know, that's an unsustainable path. Instead, it's far better, in my view, to take a bunch of those same people and say, here's a refundable tax credit that you get on a monthly basis. You can use that and you can choose the coverage that's good for you based on these parameters. So, yeah, is the Senate going to look at this and make changes? I'm sure they will. That's the nature of the process. We don't want a situation where, remember when Nancy Pelosi passed the Affordable Care Act, she said we've got to read it, or we've got to pass it so that you know what's in it. That's not happening now.
But to be fair, Pelosi's statement was ridiculous at the time. It remains ridiculous. But to be fair, I saw more than one Republican stand up yesterday and said they hadn't read the bill either. So, I mean, you guys didn't exactly take a lot of time over this.
Well, no, I think this has been debated for months. And so these last.
But did you read the bill?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but a lot of your colleagues didn't, and a lot of your colleagues had admitted they didn't. So that's a point that I think you've already had a push on. Look, a lot of people spent yesterday talking about whether you and others will have your job in 2 years. I think it's a ridiculous discussion to have, because the discussion ought to be what we had here about the welfare of the people involved. The politics will play out the way they do. But I'm going to give Andre the last question, because the people here in this state, your district, are going to want to talk to you.
Congressman, you're no stranger to these protests. In fact, there was another one at a fundraiser you attended at Arrowhead in Wheaton last night. Will you continue to host them, or will you avoid those?
So the protests are not new. I've had protests. There were protests against me in 2006 when I ran for office at that exact same location in Arrowhead. And they were
too bad. It's a nice golf course.
Yeah, it's a nice place. I'll continue to have meetings with my constituents. If you're asking about these loud town hall meetings, I did one once where people come in and they come in angry and they leave angrier. And there's, you know, and you've seen these things unravel across the country into shouting matches. I do telephone town halls. I do dozens of other smaller meetings with people that disagree with me. 20 people around the table did one last week in Barrington, people, 99% of whom were opposed to me, but it was a good discussion and a good dialogue. I'm interested in talking to people, not past people.
If people want to be involved in one of those smaller groups, what do they do? Contact you through the office?
Yep, that's it exactly.
All right, so hit the website. What's your website?
Roskam.gop.gov.
All right, I appreciate your time, and good luck with this. The Senate will take it on soon.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
7:14, we continue. This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. And it's one of my annual pleasures, though she's welcome here anytime. State Rep. Sarah Feigenholz is here, and we share a commonality in that we're both adoptees. We see each other at the meetings. Watch this formality here. Is it all right if I call you Sarah?
Please. That last name's
brutal. Will you please explain to people the bill that you passed that changed the foundational issues that adoptees had in the state of Illinois that no longer have to be a block in getting what everybody should have, and that's just a little bit of a piece of your own history.
So, yeah, we work together, Steve, and I actually want to thank you on the air because you have been so vocal about this at a time where there was a lot of stigma. Illinois passed a bill that allows adult adopted persons to get a copy of their original birth certificates over the age of 21 by simply applying for it. They can go to a website, newillinoisadoptionlaw.com, print out the form, fill it out, and write a $15 check just like a non-adopted person and get their birth certificate.
And it is just part and parcel to ought to be. That's not a privilege. It's a right as a citizen. I ought to be able to have my birth certificate.
Yeah, it's absolutely changed so many lives. I continue to get mail from people and calls about how This has changed their lives. And Illinois was actually, and I told you this when we passed the law, that we are going to be the pivot because we're such a big state, the fifth largest state. And we were the ninth state to pass the law, and now there are over 20 states that allow access to original birth certificates because of what we did.
It's a matter of health, too, because after you two met and everything, my cousin was, I think we had talked about this, too, was trying to get pregnant. She was adopted, wanted to find out if she had some health issues, and thanks to this now was able to access the records. And it had nothing to do with, I want to find my birth mom. You know, it's just strictly a health issue and a health right.
Well, the thing that you ran into for how long, 12 years, 14 years?
14.
14 years in trying to get this law done. Well-meaning for the most part, but people who had no direct tie to the issue. They didn't have an adopted child. They weren't adopted. They never went through the experience. But they were sure that you were opening up a can of worms. And people who had done the adoption process because they wanted to do it in private were going to have their lives turned upside down. And then they told three friends that was what was going to happen. And they just elongated the entire process. This is not about turning anybody's life upside down. This is about a basic right. You should ought to be able to have your birth certificate.
Yeah, it's really been quite the journey. It's quite a legacy. I think that, making the film A Simple Piece of Paper was this amazing documentary, and I think we've had Gene Strauss in here and a lot of the real-time adoptees who went through this experience to talk about how meaningful it is. And I think that, art and film has really helped the issue, too. I think, when you go to Springfield, you have a piece of paper with law written on it, but when people start storytelling, like you meeting your mom at the gift shop at Children's Memorial
14
Hospital,
years ago this week, which is why we do it now.
And I remember reading about it and saying, I got to meet this guy.
Yeah, that's how we met.
I got to meet this guy.
And you were just telling me off the air about your sisters.
So, as luck would have it, last June I got an email from someone who is my next oldest sister. I'm the oldest. She's a couple years younger than me. And I thought for sure that it was to share some bad news. But essentially what it was is to tell me that that all three of my sisters had decided that it was time. They knew that I was turning a big year. And
already 30.
Yeah.
And they just said, we promised our birth, we all had kind of, our birth mother had asked us to, like, each of us to kind of keep the noise down. And but we finally met and we had the most spectacular weekend here.
Nothing but fun.
Well, we got to know each other and it was just instantaneous love and connection.
I'd share your view. I mean, my mom and my sisters and my nieces and my brother-in-law and their little dog, too. We became family.
I have 10 nieces and nephews. One of them came with my youngest sister, Dana, to Chicago to tour three schools for university. And he hopefully will choose one of those three because I told my baby sister that she's had him long enough. He's mine now.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because you do get that. You get that family. And we're blessed to both have that because not everybody does get to go through that. Both of my parents are gone, but my brother, who we've talked about regularly on the show, Mickey, my hero, he's been adopted, in quotes, by my family that I've now known for the past 14 years. So it's this big circle that we're blessed to be a part of. So, yeah.
And you know what? It's not a matter of choosing one or the other. It's a matter of, we see blended families in so many different, ways. Why not invite first families in? It's just a blessing. If you have the right attitude, you have to have the right attitude.
And I would say again, because I know how this touches moms and dads who have gone through the process of adoption or maybe are doing it now, because I got the hundreds, if not thousands, of emails back in the day. Adoption is an unbelievable institution. It's a miracle in its own right. And if you go through the process of adopting a child, you are every bit the parent that you would be if that child sprung from your womb. So never, ever doubt that. Love is love. And that's what it's all about. So this is not about delegitimizing adoptive parents who go through the process and raise your kids. You are parents. And that's why that whole phrase, your real parents, I hate that phrase. The real parents phrase. Yeah. It needs to be dropped.
It's biological.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because all
yes.
parents are real.
Yes.
But the truth is that, you know, modern day adoptive families, the calls that I get now are women and men who want to search for their children's biological parents and need to approach their child about wanting
them. Yeah.
You know, it's a completely different...
It's a different mindset, different way of looking at
completely,
it.
Completely. Completely. I don't, you know, I want to do this. I feel that it would, you know, go, that it would close the circle for them. And I have to honestly say, this is their choice.
Yep.
You have to, this is their birth parent. If you want to give them information that you have, if you want to say, hey, let's do this together, but you need, this is their journey, if they want to take it or not. It's choice. It's about choice.
Yeah, my mother gave me the paperwork that she had at the time and said, if you're ever interested in doing this, I'll help. And I think that's to me the right approach.
Yes, I agree with you. I think empowering children so that they feel that they have control, dismantling any kind of mythology and secrecy, and, you know, children do much better with truth than they do with lies.
Well, thank you for the work you're doing, and we'll come back and talk about your favorite topic, the Cubs. And also, I have a request of you as well before you go. At 7:22, we're late here, as always, and we're going to try to fix that. Mary, get your traffic in here, and we'll catch up. Sarah Feigenholz is here. Your district includes a little place called Wrigleyville.
It's actually Lakeview. Wrigleyville is a manufactured name, Steve.
Yes, but you are the proud proprietor of the district that includes your beloved Chicago Cubs.
My beloved Cubbies.
And let me tell you, what a nut my friend Sarah Feigenholz is. She didn't get her ticket for Game 7 last year, but she went to Game 7.
She did.
Until when?
Probably about the eighth inning of Game 6.
How about that?
I want to be sure.
I'm so superstitious.
Oh, I know.
The socks, everything, the whole...
So were you laughing, crying, giddy once you get the final out after the rain delay in Game 7? Were you...
I was in shock.
Were you rolling around in the fetal position there on the ground in Cleveland? What were you doing?
I was in shock, but I was... I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I was weeping.
Jubilant,
with joy.
Say.
Weeping with joy.
And who's the first person you wanted to call? Was there somebody that jumped out and said, this is my Cubs connection?
You know what? I would have never known what a baseball was if it wasn't for my dad.
Yeah.
And so when the Cubs won the division, or the championship, actually, it was a very warm, sunny day, and I got on my bike, and I took a picture of him, put it in the basket of the bike, and did a victory lap.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah,
cool.
I just had to, because it was he who taught me to love baseball, and while I was sitting on his lap when I was a little kid, and he died when I was really young. But I still have that memory, and I have been a Cub fan long before a state rep, and as luck would have it, I ran for office, and here it is in my district. My mother was a physician a block from Wrigley Field.
Is that right?
She was. And, you know, she was about delivering babies and not baseball. But she didn't know this, but a couple of times I would cut school and show up in her office. And she'd go, Bill, what are you doing here? I'm like, I have a headache. I don't feel good. And she would say, you're fine. Go back to school. And I'd go to the ball game.
Right. I have a headache. I have to go to Wrigley. That's the best cure.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a Cub fan. I used to be a fan club president when I was a kid.
Is that right? Which fan club? The team or a player?
Actually, you were kind of in a rotation. And I was lucky enough to become the fan club president of the Ray Burris fan club. He was a pitcher.
Sure.
Do you remember Ray Burris?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where he is. But I think he's still involved in baseball. And I had wonderful experiences. I had a blast. Remember Carmen Fanzone?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
My first ride through Graceland Cemetery was with three or four other young women. And Carmen Fanzone was driving us through the cemetery, showing us all of the great monuments.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, you know, what a great childhood I had.
And being a Cub nut, are they going to do it again? They're off to a
we
slow start.
We don't talk
start.
About that.
You're going to take it one day at a time?
We don't talk about that, Steve.
Okay. Here's one thing we have to talk about. We're out of time, but one thing we have to talk about. I told you off the air, and we've talked about this on the air. I am nauseated by so much of what Donald Trump does. I'm equally nauseated by so much of what Mike Madigan doesn't do. And so people don't know where to put me. Here's where you need to put me. Put me down the middle, because the far right and the far left are the problem, not the solution. And yesterday could have been an example. We'll see how it plays out in the Senate. But certainly scaring people to death seems to be the way to go. We don't have a budget. I'm not going to ask you to get into a budget fight with me. But will you talk to the Speaker and tell him it'd be really swell if he'd show up here and answer a few questions?
I would absolutely tell him that. But I also want you to know that as we speak, our budget committee mm-hmm. is working very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of conversation going on to get to yes. We have tried. And the governor is...
Well, don't go down this road.
Down
this road, we're going to be here till noon.
I got to tell you, I'm ready. Because the governor has not held up his end of the bargain on a lot of things. And Speaker Madigan, not a perfect guy, but, you know,
when you talk to him, do the words come out of his mouth? I mean, can you hear him speak in return? Because I don't know that I've heard his voice in months.
Really?
Yeah.
I hear him speak all the time.
Oh, you do?
He speaks to our caucus, yes.
Yeah. Can I give you $100 and have you hook up a phone in his office so constituents could actually call him?
I don't need the money. I'll help you do it.
Okay. Because, you know, he doesn't have a phone in his office. You can't actually call his office. You can call Steve Brown, but you can't call him. It's like a Jay-Z posse sort of thing without the Beyonce part.
What would you ask him, Steve? If you got him on the phone, what would you ask
him? Oh, you know what? I'd do something I would never do. I would actually write out questions and give them to him in advance so he could prepare his answers.
So why don't you do that?
I have tried.
Do you know the...
He's been invited every day. This is 898. Is he coming in today? I'm being told he's not going.
Crickets.
Yeah. We got the crickets again. Yeah. And whenever the crickets sound, seventh caller's a big winner. If Mike Madigan doesn't show up, yes, I have to give you a prize. Seventh caller's a big winner now, 312-981-7200. Just ask him if he'll come in.
You know, but he is working. He's a very hard worker. He's very diligent.
So hard.
And you know,
cutting that map up in those special little pie pieces, so hard. Really, really hard.
Will we have a budget deal, you think?
If Feigenholz was in charge of it, we'd have it done.
Oh, I know. Absolutely, we would.
If women were running the show.
Absolutely. I'd sign up for that plan.
We would have a budget, and then we'd go to lunch.
Well, guess what, guys? There's more women in the Illinois House now than there are men.
How great is that?
Finally.
Right. Well, just, you know, listen, if you get it done, that'd be great. Just somebody get it done, please.
Yes.
And tell Mike I said hi.
It's 60-30-1. You need 60 House votes. 30 Senate votes, but one governor who has to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, the
mm-hmm.
governor has gotten budgets before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They've been reasonable.
This is personal. Madigan hates Rauner. Hates him.
How do you know? Did he tell you that?
Couldn't tell me that because he doesn't show up.
Do you think Rauner hates Madigan?
I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. How do you know? Has he told you that? We don't have time for this argument.
Steve, you
have to come back in to have this fight.
You need a little history lesson. You really do.
Oh, don't talk down to me. That's not going to get you anywhere on this show.
Thank you. You need a history lesson.
Okay. All right. Mike Madigan's 40 years. Okay. Well, I got waved off? Was that like a third base? Are you giving me the signal to steal?
1818, the state of Illinois became a state.
Yes, when
There's
Mike
been
Madigan
a budget
was,
every year.
1818, that's when Madigan was first made speaker,
except
right?
Except for when Bruce Rauner showed up.
Yeah, it's all his fault.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Very adversarial culture.
Yes, Madigan has no special interest, and he only cares about the people of Illinois. I'm wrong on every level.
Well,
Everybody should care about the people of the state.
Broad brush comments that I'd like to hear some details on. And okay. I'm happy to have a debate with you about right and wrong in Springfield, because I think that some of your listeners...
Listen, you're there.
Yeah.
And you're one of the people I have faith in.
Well...
I love you. you're there and you're... Too. Listen, I know you're there and I know you're working.
We really are.
I don't know that about the speaker.
He's working. He's the hardest working person in Springfield.
For his own interests.
Absolutely wrong. We wouldn't let him get away with that. We push him around a lot.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
He listens to his caucus. He has a very strong, opinionated, passionate caucus about democratic principles.
Mm-hmm.
We care about the middle class. Mm-hmm. We care about working men and women of this state.
Do we care about getting a budget?
We care about getting a budget.
I know you do. Does he?
Everybody does. But one guy.
Can he convince me? I got 30 seconds, and I'm already 5 minutes late. One thing he's done, one thing he's done in the last 30 days to move the budget process forward?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, we have a
budget. No, we. Him.
There is a budget in the Senate that's going to be voted on, maybe even today, called the Lifeline Budget, that will actually pay bills and keep the doors open.
That's temporary.
Well, and we're also working on a big picture one right now, too.
Okay. Again, I have faith in you.
Lots of cuts. Lots of cuts.
As a taxpaying citizen of the state of Illinois, I'm glad you're there.
Well, thank you.
And I would be really glad if Mr. Madigan decided it was time to go home and enjoy some time with his family.
I'll let him know that, Steve. He may not have heard that from you.
No, he doesn't know that at all. Last thing I heard was Cochran needs to get a hobby or something. That was the last words out of his mouth.
A life? Yeah, no, a hobby. Yeah.
All right, we're late. Listen, this is your fault. The show's completely out of kilter now.
I love it.
And it's Sarah Feigenold's fault. I love you. Thank you for everything you've done for adoption, for your Cubs, and for everything you do for the people in your district, because I know you're working.
And the state. Thanks so much.
And if people want to get a hold of you and have questions about anything from a streetlight to a stray cat, what do they need to do?
They can call my office, the old-fashioned.
You have a phone?
I have a phone.
What's the number?
773-296-4141. Or they can go to my website and email me at sarah@staterepsarah.com. No H on Sarah.
One of the greats, Sarah Feigenholtz, back after this on 720 WGN.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City. It's a long,
we're listening live in New York at Trump Tower. President Trump up early this morning.
History lesson?
He's so studying how a bill is made. Yesterday, in meeting with the Australian Prime Minister, he said their health care is better than ours. The Australian health care system is as close to Obamacare as you can get it.
Yeah.
He said that a few hours after Trump care was passed. Again, the only time Donald Trump really ever gets in trouble is when he speaks.
Or tweets.
And that's kind of speaking,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if he would not express himself in any way for the next several months, I think there's a chance that he could have much more success.
You know, you play the Schoolhouse Rock, but I don't think he realizes. I know they did have a celebration last night with the pizza party.
Oh,
deal.
They couldn't. They were pulling muscles, high-fiving each other.
But this bill is not going to pass the Senate.
Oh, of course not. No. And it's going to happen.
Which means it's dead.
It literally could have, and I'm not making this up, hundreds of amendments.
Yeah.
Avik Roy has written about health care and continues to do the same and speak about it for many, many years. And though you may not have heard of him yet, you certainly will. He's been on this show before, and he'll be back here. And he's a national television guy all the time. But anyway, he'll be on again in a few minutes to talk about it and what we should be afraid of and maybe what we shouldn't. I hope he's got some good news.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I predicted it a long time ago. I said it's failing. And now it's obvious that it's failing. It's dead. It's essentially dead. If we don't pay lots of ransom money over to the insurance companies, it would die immediately. So what we have is something very, very incredibly well-crafted. Tell you what, there is a lot of talent standing behind me. An unbelievable amount of talent. That I can tell you.
Avik Roy writes the Apothecary blog at Forbes, along with the work he's been doing on healthcare, so we don't have to, for quite some time now. He's one of my favorite guests. I would advise you, if you get a talk show, get Avik Roy on as a guest. And he joins us now. How are you, sir? Avik, are you with me?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Hey, man. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Listen, big development yesterday in the House. You could tell by the way they were high-fiving each other. Obviously, it changes in the Senate. There is, panic in the streets if you watch the various news networks, but none of them, including me, frankly, are as informed as you are. Should we worry or should we wait?
We should wait. I think there's some good things in this bill. There's some things in this bill that they need to fix in the Senate. And so I'm glad this bill got out of the House because I think the House had kind of done what it was going to do. The bill wasn't going to get that much better. It could only get worse from there. So I'm glad they passed it. Let's let the Senate have a shot and push them in the right direction.
One of the things that we were talking about, I guess, earlier this hour was this mental health provision, or the scare that once it's turned over to the states and waivers are granted, that mental health could take a backseat to other conditions again at a time with opioid addiction and all that we now know about mental health, trying to get rid of some of the stigma and treat it appropriately like every other major condition, that it's going to take a back seat. Is that something that can be fixed?
Well, I think the bill actually does the right thing there. The bill says the federal government's going to give states the flexibility to apply for waivers from the exact laundry list of requirements that are in Obamacare. That's a good thing. Look, I think states where the opioid crisis is a significant problem, they're going to know how to address that, and they're not going to just willy-nilly throw these regulations out in a way that doesn't benefit the people in that state. So the state legislature, they're responsive to their constituents, and they're going to do what's right for their constituents. But let's be clear. If you have a system in which you regulate more things and you mandate more things and you tell the insurance companies what they have to do, the cost of your insurance plan goes up. And that's the thing that we're trying to solve here. Health insurance is too expensive in this country, and it's too expensive in large part that the government tells you all these different things that the insurance plan has to cover.
All right, so you said you like some of the things that are in this. The Senate's got to fix some other things. What's primary for the Senate to fix?
Yeah, the most important thing for the Senate to fix is the way the new tax credits would work to help low-income people afford coverage. Basically, the plan doesn't provide enough financial assistance to people who are just above the poverty line, the working poor, to afford health insurance. And so there's going to be several million of those people, particularly those in their 50s and 60s, who are making, say, $20,000 a year, $15,000 a year, $30,000 a year. People in that camp who are not going to get enough assistance to buy health insurance under the Paul Ryan version of the plan. So that's the key thing the Senate has to fix. They need to devote more resources to helping those individuals and less resources to helping people like me.
So with the mandate going away, though, for not everyone having to pay to get in unless there's a penalty, there's also this talk that older folks are going to get whacked with exponentially higher coverage. If you go with the basic assumption, a generality that, you know, well, you're older, you've earned more money, you have more money, but you're also sicker. How real is that scare, and what do we do about it?
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of the truth. So what Obamacare did was it doubled premiums, or tripled in some cases premiums, for young people in the theory that that would help fund coverage for older people. But in fact, what we found is that Obamacare raised premiums for everybody. Again, these are people, we're talking about a subset of the health insurance market. We're talking about people who buy health insurance on their own, who don't get it from the government in terms of Medicare or Medicaid, or who don't get it from their employer. So it's about, you know, about 15% of the population that we're talking about here. So it's important, but it's not everybody. But for that population, what Obamacare did was it doubled or tripled premiums for young people in the hopes that old people would pay slightly less. As a result of that, it didn't work out that way. In fact, everyone's premiums went up. So by actually going back to the old form of regulation, more young people will buy insurance, and that will actually lower premiums for older people. So this will be a much better system for everybody.
So the math will work in that regard. You're confident of that?
Yeah. Like, you know, we've all heard the news reports about how what was important about Obamacare to make it work. You had to get young and healthy people into the insurance pool because their premiums are going to be lower. They consume less health care. Well, the only way you're going to get them into the pool is by making the price of insurance fair for them, meaning low, because they're not consuming a lot of health care because they're young and healthy. So you got to make health insurance less expensive for them in order to get them in the pool. That makes health insurance less expensive for older people, too.
Avik, does the fear, though, come over the confusion of the bill, specifically that it would allow states to get a waiver from the Obamacare pre-existing coverage mandate? Is that what kind of throws up the red flag and people say, oh, well, then it doesn't cover pre-existing conditions, when, in fact, most of it does?
Yeah, I mean, there's a combination of confusion and actually intentional disinformation by people who don't support the bill. So the bill actually does not change the requirement that insurers offer coverage to everyone regardless of pre-existing condition. That piece of Obamacare is preserved in the law, in the bill, and that's something that the president really cared about. So they didn't change that. So that's just flat-out false. Everyone will be able to sign up for coverage even if they have a pre-existing condition. Now, the key thing is, if you can sign up for coverage, how much does that coverage cost you? What are the costs the insurance company has to bear to offer that coverage to you? And then what's the price to you because of how much the government is subsidizing? And that's where the bill does a lot of good work, actually. It creates a huge fund of about $200 billion to help people who have pre-existing conditions afford health insurance in this country. I think it's going to be fine.
The regulations, if there are any, related to deductibles, because the one thing that it really is finally getting some traction is people talking about how much their deductibles are, especially in the last couple of years. I know mine have gone up a lot.
Yeah.
Everybody I know has gone up a lot. How does the deductible piece fold into this whenever the Senate kicks back their version?
Well, it all goes together. So, again, we're talking specifically about people who buy health insurance on their own. If you, Steve Cochran, get your health insurance from WGN,
right,
this doesn't affect you directly. But for people who buy health insurance on their own, if you lower the cost of insurance overall, you should see deductibles go down, too. Remember, with Obamacare, people's premiums doubled and their deductibles doubled, too, and sometimes tripled. So all these things go together. At the end of the day, deductibles are another way of offsetting the high cost of health insurance. And so if you lower the cost of health insurance, all those things can go in the right direction.
So is it fair to describe you as cautiously optimistic?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Cautiously optimistic. Look, the Senate has to do some important things to fix this bill. There are meaningful and important flaws in this bill. But there are things in this bill that it gets right and things that will make the healthcare system better. So we have to continue to encourage the Senate to move this thing in the right direction. We'll see where it goes.
And give me a name of a senator or two to watch who is being key players in accomplishing those goals.
Oh, boy, there's quite a few. I mean, one key person is Orrin Hatch, who's the head of chair of the Senate Finance Committee, and the Senate Finance Committee is the main health care committee. Another person to watch is Bill Cassidy, a senator from Louisiana, who's put out his own replace plan that's very different from the House bill. So it'll be interesting to see how the plan produced by him and Susan Collins of Maine, how that gets integrated, if at all, to what people are deliberating on. Another person to watch is Lamar Alexander, who's the chairman of the other major health care committee, which is the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. And I would keep an eye out for people like Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Mike Lee, because those conservative senators, their buy-in is going to be very important, too, to whatever they end up doing.
It's hard to keep your eye on Ted Cruz. It's like looking at the sun. You got to turn away. Avik, other than the apothecary, where do we find your work?
You can go to our new think tank, the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity. The website is freeop.org, F-R-E-O-P-T. FreeOp.org.
Enjoy the weekend. Thanks very much. I always appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
It's 8:02 News Next, 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should.
We didn't go live to London. When Dean Richards heard that Prince Phillips was stepping down, he thought, this is my chance, making a move on the Queen. Going to go over. Hey, Queenie. Hey, Queenie, it's Deanie.
Hey, Queen, how you doing, Queen? How you doing?
All right, now, Dean, it's 8:14 in the morning with a time change. It's Tuesday at noon there. What time is it there? All right, you've been listening to Dean Richards live from London. Apparently, he's got to go figure out. He's got to go to Big Ben figure out what time it is.
Hey, kids, Big Ben, Parliament.
Sandberg, we lost him. Yeah. Okay.
That's cute.
We'll get him back. Dean live from London in his hotel room.
Yeah. He'll be there. Maybe he's going to a retirement party for Prince Philip.
So Jay Cutler's in the broadcast.
Yeah.
Booth.
He is.
How about that?
Fox.
So, Dave, you brought up a great point off the air. You think this is a reaction?
Well, I'm just wondering.
Possibly.
Tony Romo goes from, although he didn't play last year because of injury, didn't play much, he goes from being an active player cut loose by his team to going to CBS as their number one guy. And now Cutler gets cut loose by the Bears, and he ends up the Fox on one of their top teams.
Which team is he on? Second? Second?
I think they're the second team. Kevin Burkhardt, because Buck and Aikman are the top team.
Yeah.
Kevin Burkhardt, who's very good, and Charles Davis, who's very good as an analyst. If you're going to break a guy in, that's, probably a pretty good place to put him, in a three-man booth where you don't have to rely on him too much. he gets a chance to pick his spots.
You've called football for years.
Mm-hmm.
Three men is too, one,
I'm not
too
a big,
many.
I thought a three-man booth was great when you Monday had Howard football. Cosell yeah, and yeah, Dandy yeah. Don, yeah. You know, but
it's
the only those
time
days.
It's the only time it ever worked.
Now, here's the question. Fox has, I think, the first three Bears games this year.
Okay.
Will they assign that crew to the opener against Atlanta?
Oh.
How much interest would that spark?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I don't know.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Jay.
You, Jay. We appreciate the insight.
That's
Dean's
more
back.
Than Jay said in, what, 6 weeks?
We return live to London with Deanie and the Queenie. Good morning, Dean.
As we are going to be called once we make the official announcement that
yep.
we're, me and Mrs. Windsor, we got a thing going on.
All right, so you're there for the premiere of Alien?
Alien Covenant. As I saw it last night, they had the global premiere at Leicester Square, which is a huge, it would be like a, you know, like a Hollywood Boulevard kind of massive
mm-hmm.
Opening with red carpet and all the stars were there. And they bring in weaselly press guys like me to see the movie. And tomorrow I'll interview the cast. His name is completely.
Yeah, the people that were in the movie, they were great.
Michael Fassbender.
That's
Michael
the
Fassbender,
guy.
Catherine Waterston. Mm-hmm. Danny McBride's in the movie, which is a little bit of a surprise, kind of a dramatic role for him. Damien Bichard, who's an Oscar nominee. The movie's actually quite good. Are you into the whole Alien?
Nope. I think honestly, the whole first movie could have been solved with a Prilosec.
Maybe.
Yeah, seemed like indigestion.
It seemed like indigestion until the indigestion burst through your chest. I think this might be the fifth. I'd have to go back and double check, but I think there were three Alien movies. There was the Prometheus movie, which was a prequel, and this one is sort of in between all of those. It is directed by Ridley Scott.
He's good.
He's really good. Of all the Ridleys, he is my favorite of all the Ridleys. But I enjoyed it. I had a great time. It's a little bit scary and really disgusting, but it was fun. You know, sometimes you don't want to think too much at a movie. You just want to go and have some fun. And, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, when you go to see a movie here in London, you know, at home, you have popcorn, you know, you get your milk duds. I'm not sure if I'm a tea and crumpet man while I'm trying to watch a movie.
That's a good point. I've never watched a movie in London. I've never gone to the cinema in London.
Yeah.
So what is at the concession counter?
It's actually all the same stuff, but I've been telling everybody, well, good, you know, it's fun to go to the movies here, but I can't eat bangers and mash while I'm watching movies.
Right. Fish and chips again?
It's too much. I keep dropping the malted vinegar.
Right, and when you have fish and chips wrapped in newspaper, it's very loud in a movie. Very, very loud.
It's very distracting. It's worse than the cellophane noise, which is, you know, normally met.
Are you applying a grade to your review yet, or is it too soon?
Oh, no, it's way too soon to apply a grade to it. The movie doesn't open until the 19th, so we've got
a
couple of weeks. And by the way, you know, what I told you about the movie so
not
far,
a review?
Goes without saying, absolutely not a review, merely just, you know, an observation. I just happened to be here in London, just happened to stroll into this theater, just happened to see this movie last night, just a couple of stray thoughts. But
we should have my friend Paul Coit to you know, go over and hang around with Dean.
I was going to contact him before I got here to see if he was available. So I thought that would have been a really funny surprise as when we, you know, arranged to do this. Instead of me being on the phone, it would have been him.
Yeah, that's funny.
Dean could show Paul a few things around London.
Yes. yes. And explain to Paul where he is. All right, hold the line. We'll come back. More with Dean in a second.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9.
Tonight on BBC America, it's Deanie and the Queenie. Check your local listings. Are you in a fancy London hotel?
I am in a fancy London hotel right now.
They didn't put you in some flea bag joint?
There, I am not at the equivalent of a Red Roof Inn. Not that that's a flea bag joint. I've stayed at many a Red Roof Inn, but I'm at a like super fancy kind of joint.
We're
doing the interviews. We're doing the interviews.
Right.
Where they put us up where they put the stars, you know, because they, you know, we're going to get together and talk. So we stay at fancy places. I'll just give you an idea of how exclusive this place is. You don't even have to put quarters in the Magic Fingers bed to make it go.
You're kidding. Is there a guy that comes up named William who just shakes the bed for you?
I have a guy. There's a guy named Faversham.
Are you near the ice machine too, Dean?
I am near the ice machine, although nobody uses ice here. So
yeah, that's true.
When you're an American, you got all the ice that you want.
Yeah, that's very true.
Other thing that I noticed here on this trip to London, and I've come here quite a few times.
Yeah.
To do interviews, but for some reason, I notice more quintessentially British business establishments. I don't know if it has to do with Brexit. I don't know if it has to do with, you know, people are, you know, trying to maintain their local identity more. But I've noticed stores. I don't know if you're familiar with some of these. Starbucks is one of them that I'm seeing more and more. There's an English business called Subway.
They really have taken it local.
The Gap.
Yes.
There's a lot of stores I know it's called The Gap. I don't know what it is.
Well, that's why when you get on the tube, the subway, and they say, mind the gap, that's just a reminder to go to The Gap.
Yes, to go to The Gap. Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC, something like that.
That's very British. Very British.
You're right. So, I mean, that more than any other trip here, I'm noticing stores like that all over the place. So
it's very near Buckingham Palace. There was a place called the Stiff Upper Lip, and I could never tell because I never went in. Is this a bar? Is this a pub? Is this a place that sells lips? I don't know what happens there.
I'm going to go check it out, and if it's a place that sells lips, I'm going to bring some back for you.
All right, because you're internationally known, intergalactically known, Dean Richards, do the other lesser important critics look up to you on trips like this?
I think we all find each other equally annoying.
Okay, all right. And Michael Fassbender.
There's a lot of respect. You know, WGN means something to
people. Dean Richards means something.
All over the world, so.
And are you recognized as Billy Joel even as you walk the streets of London?
I have not had any Billy Joel sightings here. Oddly, English people on the street ask me if I'm Tom Skilling, and I don't understand.
That is weird. He also gets confused for a member of Parliament, an MP, as they say locally, one Henry Flabby Bottom, which is a traditional British name, and he looks just like Dean.
You know what I did find weird, and I guess it's not so weird, but yesterday I had some time and I went for a nice walk, and I had my Cubs hat on, and usually if I'm in another city and I have my Cubs hat on, people go, hey, Cubs, go Cubs, they finally made it, but you know, something like that, not a peep, so no one's saying anything about the Cubs here today. Come on, there've got to be some Americans walking on the street. You see
an
American baseball hat, and
yeah, you'd think.
You know, you figure, you know, if something happens, you know, at least there's another American around somewhere.
Maybe just go by the embassy and point at your head. You know, that's a possibility. But I'm going to call Paul Coit and see if he can come over and just follow you around London and keep an eye on you.
Yeah, that would be great. Maybe I'm going to be here for a couple more days, so maybe I could just stay at his house.
That'd be great.
Save you some money.
Will you be doing the show from there on Sunday?
I will not. I will be in the air returning home on Sunday morning. So Jim Toronto is actually going to fill in for me. So
once he comes out of his shell, he's going to be fine.
to loosen up a little bit. But we've got left some recorded interviews that we did for him to play back. I was at the James Beard Awards on Monday night. We talked to some of the biggest names in the culinary world who were there. We're going to play those back for you. Zoe Saldana from the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which, by the way, opens today. I gave a Dean's List B minus. I liked the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie more. This one just didn't seem to have quite as much edge as the first one,
okay.
But still enjoyable, and it's going to be a huge box office opener.
That's our friend Dean Richards live from London. Remember, it's Deanie and the Queenie in all the tabloids this morning. Thanks, buddy. Safe travels. We're back with a big story in a moment, and then Willie Geist on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Willie Geist, you ready? He is, or he's not quite ready? Not quite ready. Okay, got it. Willie Geist will join us in just a second. On Sunday, Willie's going to be talking to the co-founders of Instagram. And about an hour ago, Andrea said off the air, I wish I had thought of Instagram.
Well, you know, because I take a lot of pictures. We take a lot of pictures. I thought, man, if I thought of Instagram, I'd be sitting on my island.
You wouldn't be sitting here?
Well, I'd be doing the show from my island.
Yeah.
My private island.
Let's go to Willie. Good morning, Willie Geist.
Morning, Steve. How are you, man?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing great.
I want to congratulate Morning Joe. By the way, that's his actual name, Morning Joe. And Mika Brzezinski on their engagement. Will you be the ring bearer?
I like to think so. Like the sweet little girls who throw the petals when they walk down the aisle. I want to be one of those.
Chris, what are you, six? Are you 6'5", 6'6"? I'll tell you.
6'4". 6'4". It'd be a wonderfully awkward scene if I did that.
Are they going to have a big wedding?
I don't know. I don't know if they've gotten that far. I wasn't surprised, I guess, by it. I didn't know that was happening. They kind of sprung it on us yesterday morning, but I'm happy for them. You know, it's going to be, they'll put on a good wedding. I know that.
Yeah, and it's good. Now, here's what makes it interesting. You know, it's not like Morning Joe, the show needs the help because the numbers are great. It's mostly Willie. Yeah. But the fact is, this will make even more people tune in because they'll be seeing, ooh, is there trouble at the house?
Yeah.
No, Morning Joe and...
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Joe and Mika, they you know, they already nag at each other, mm-hmm. and they already flirt with each other. It's been going on for years. But I do think at some point, NBC, and specifically MSNBC, might want to give Joe maybe a nosy neighbor who you just see over the top of the fence. You know, maybe a cute kid next door. I mean, it is a TV show.
Well, yeah, what do we do for season two? Like, this is a great season one, but we've got to introduce some new characters.
Maybe you could be like his brother-in-law that just can't figure out his life and stays on the couch. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, down in the rec room. I like that.
All right, so on Sunday, and by the way, if you've not seen Willie Geist do these one-on-one interviews, or in this case, maybe one-on-two or three, they're great. And on Sunday, in a rare joint interview, the Instagram co-founders, Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Are going to be sitting down with you.
Yeah, it was cool. They don't do a lot of interviews together. We convinced them to sit down. It's, you know, it's that tech story, the startup story. Two guys had an idea. They failed at one company. They learned something from that idea, started another one. You believe Instagram has been around for just over 6 years. So October of 2010 is when they launched it. And 18 months later, Mark Zuckerberg came to them. So they're 18 months removed from sitting alone in a coffee shop together and said, I'd like to buy your company for $1 billion.
Oh,
how does
God.
That sound?
Yeah, that'd be okay. That'd be okay. And they said, well, what's your company? Well, you know, we take pictures and we put them online.
They didn't have a counter offer, Willie?
And I think they just took the billion and didn't look a gift horse in the mouth at that point. But what's funny is Kevin, when he was at Stanford, he was kind of this whiz kid, and he was in college, and Zuckerberg had identified him and came to him and said, I've just started this company. It's called Facebook. I'd love for you to come work for me. And Kevin got advice from people around him, said, no, this is a fad. It's a college website.
It's never going to catch up.
Yeah, they said, stay in school, do the right thing. So he blew his first shot to work for Facebook, but then Zuckerberg came back and gave him another chance, and they got to keep control of Instagram. So even though Facebook owns Instagram, these two guys still run the company under that umbrella.
You know, it would be a cool story, and I'd love to see this, and NBC has the resources to do it. Go around and find the parents of all of these people that have started these unbelievably successful, unbelievably high-dollar sites, and find the parents and see if they're willing to admit that they told the kids, will you play outside?
Right.
Stop writing ones and zeros. Go outside.
Stay off the video games.
Exactly. Well, I think there is a thread. These guys all, the ones I've talked to, Airbnb guy Brian Chesky, they all had, even as kids, these minds where they would look at even toys, Brian Chesky talked about, and he was bothered by how inefficient they were or their design was poor. So they'd look at problems starting at toys and now social media and even bigger things, and they say, what's wrong with that? How could this be improved?
Right.
And that's the thing I see with all of them. So they might have been the kind of kids that annoyed the hell out of their parents, actually.
Willie, how many naysayers did they have? You know, how when Kevin said about Zuckerberg, oh, it's, you know, people told him it's just a fad. How many people told these guys, it's pictures?
Yeah. It's just pictures.
Yeah,
what's going to happen?
Deal.
Right. Well, he did. He said a lot of people said that because there are also a bunch of other companies like that in the space. But he said they were all trying to do too much. They realized all they needed was put the picture up, let your friends see it, let them tell you if they like it. And that's all we're going to do. And it took off. And they got, you know, they talk about getting lucky. They got some breaks early on. Snoop Dogg, of all people, found it and thought it was cool. And he started putting videos up. So his audience was drawn to that. And so they actually, you'll see it in the interview. It's funny. They credit Snoop Dogg with a lot of their success.
That's hilarious.
That's funny.
Well, you know, Snoop's made a lot of people. Look what he did for Martha Stewart. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
Nobody would even know her. Now, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but next Sunday you're going to talk to Jack Dorsey. Jack Dorsey, who spent a lot of time on Square, but mostly known as the CEO of Twitter, and he's still trying to figure out how to make the company go. Here's what I want you to do, Willie, because we've been friends a long time. I want you to look Jack in the eye and say, Steve Cochran owns a big chunk of Twitter, you know, in Steve Cochran dollars. Will you put some freaking advertising on this site? Nobody's going to turn away. Come on, Jack, let's go.
Well, I think they just announced this initiative with Bloomberg News where they're just going to stream news right through Twitter. So when you open your Twitter, you're getting news through Bloomberg, and they're putting advertising all over that. So I think he's gotten that message. They had a good last couple quarters. They added a bunch of users, made some money. But he's same thing. He's a fascinating guy. He started on the ground floor of Twitter, had kind of a rough time for a while with some of the founders, left the company, started Square, and then a couple of years ago, Twitter calls him back and says, Jack, can you come back and save the company? So that's where he is right now.
Isn't it remarkable that who do you know that's not on Twitter?
Right.
It's become the new news wires, around the world. There's a breaking story in the middle of a mountain in Afghanistan. Somebody's got their phone and they're on Twitter.
Right.
And you can probably find them. And yet you can't find a way to save this company. Of course, you got to be able to do it. So, well, I hope the Bloomberg thing works, mostly because I don't want to brag, Willie, but I got $100 in this company and I want to make some money on it.
I was going to say, don't you have like 3 shares?
Four.
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 Well, you got to start there. You got in early, and then we'll keep growing with you.
So, all right, tell everybody where they can see the Instagram guys and you Sunday.
On NBC. We'll see you guys Sunday morning, 7 o'clock in the morning in Chicago.
All right, and also Twitter next week as the Willie Geist interviews continue. Willie Geist on Ice coming to the Rosemont Arena soon. We're trying to put that together. Tell Mika and Joe. Yes, of course.
Oh, great.
And tell Mika and Joe we say congratulations.
I sure will. Thanks, guys.
All the best. The great Paula Poundstone in just a moment. Let's get to traffic. Mary's here. What do you got, Mary? I noticed from LifeLock yesterday that somebody had tried to open a short-term loan with my name. We were able to shut it down in less than an hour.
I'm sorry about that, by the way.
Yeah. Both of you?
Dave and I, yeah.
Both of you using my
ideas? I just needed some cash.
Paula Poundstone, do you have my Social Security number as well?
I do. Should I give it out now?
No, don't give it out now. Or if you do, just give it out in sets of 3 numbers and see if people can piece it together.
You know, I was that Google scam thing.
Yeah.
That came. I get that. Fortunately, I did not act on it. I didn't put it. There's something about it that didn't seem quite right to me.
So it just your inner protective voice went off.
Oh, well, they also they do it under the guise of like it's a friend trying to
you.
And what hackers don't realize is I have very few friends. So that's where they trip up.
So you know all of them, and you know when they're contacting you.
Well, pretty much. Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
You know what? I dare somebody to steal my identity. You would
Try being me for a few minutes. You crack like a ripe melon, you. No one could be me.
I have
14 cats. Who wants a slice of that pie?
Other than Paula Poundstone, LifeLock's the way to go.
I am totally in support of LifeLock.
If we started a website called 14 Cats and it was just meant to stop hackers, how do you think that would do?
14 Cats that was meant to stop hackers?
Yeah, well, 14cats.com.
My cats have friends. Oh, my gosh. And charge accounts.
We need to get your cat's ID theft protection.
Yeah. No, my cat's credit score is better than mine, which is so
humiliating. Wait a minute. All 14, or is there like
all
a leader?
All 14 of
wow,
them.
Wow. That's incredible.
Well, my cat Tonks has been a little extravagant.
Right. Exactly. $9.99 a month. $9.99 a month, or get the Ultimate Plus. Save 10%. 100 to LifeLock or LifeLock.com. My turn? Still my turn? Okay.
You're up back on 14 cats.
Paula Poundstone's here. I was telling Paula off the air. Her new book, by the way, is called The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. And we'll ask her where she searched for human happiness. But it's always amusing to me to see who slugs the book, who's willing to step out on a limb and say, this is a great book. You got comedy legends lining up for you.
I did, didn't I? Yeah, no. I have the blurbs on the back of it.
Yeah.
I have Carl Reiner. I have Dick Van Dyke and Carl Reiner, P.J. O'Rourke, Roy Blunt Jr., Trisha Yearwood, Peter Sagal, Pete Docter, Dick Cavett.
But my favorite, Lily Tomlin.
Lily Tomlin.
The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness is a remarkable journey. I laughed, I cried, I got another cat.
Yeah.
There you go.
You are selling cats.
I'm not just selling cats. When someone comes to my home, and it doesn't happen all that frequently, as hackers will tell you, but when someone comes to my home, there's a door prize. You get a cat if you come to my house.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, do you need a ticket?
It's a nice thing. No, just stop by. You can be selling Jesus or real estate or anything. Just, hoping that I would buy some solar panels. Guess what? You get a cat.
Paula's got two shows coming up at Thalia Hall on May 13th. We'll tell you and get tickets for that, and we'll find out where she looked to find happiness. CLTV will join us too in just a second. Stand by for that. Before we go any further, though, Mother's Day is coming up. You got the Sherry's Berries? Oh, the Sherry's Berries would be so great.
Steve, those are really tasty.
I remember what they tasted like until you and producer Sandberg stole them and ate them all.
Now, wait a minute. You don't get berries. You're not a mother.
He is in some days.
They call me mother.
In the slang way, like a mother.
But
that's
here's the
different
thing: if you use my code Steve C on the little microphone when you go on the website on Sherry's Bears, you're going to get an extra box for $10.
Wait a minute.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. The microphone in the top right-hand corner. Go to berries.com, berries.com. Put the promo code Steve C and click on the mic. This amazing deal won't last long. It's $19.99 plus another $10 gets you a second box. You're going to need that. Mother's Day right around the corner. Make your mom happy. You'd like Sherry's Berries, wouldn't you? Maybe I get these for you.
Oh, I love Sherry's Berries. Although I have three children, and I've never encouraged my children in any way to do like Mother's Day stuff. I just would prefer they treat me nicely on a regular basis. And when it became clear that that wasn't going to happen... there was something so phony about Mother's Day.
We got to have you talk to Sandberg. She doesn't believe in holidays.
Well, so I don't believe in holidays. I mean, I love Christmas. I just don't. What do I want with Mother's Day? I don't know. It just does
no
nothing
presents,
for me.
No cats. No.
I don't. Yeah. Just. Yeah. I tell you what. Hey, kids. It's Mother's Day. How about you sift the litter boxes today? Yeah. I don't know. Does that. Right, here's
that
a card.
Seems fair.
Okay, that's nice, honey. Thank you.
The Steve Cochran Show.
When I get on the plane, all I want to do is sleep, too. And now the pilot insists on talking for the entire flight. Have you noticed that? Telling you the junk out the window? I don't think I ever seen anything they pointed out ever anyhow. And if the thing is on the left, then I'm on the right. And if I'm on the left, then the thing is on the right. If it's only on one side of the plane, then why tell everyone? Tell the people on the left, for heaven's sakes.
People on the left. Don't tell the people on the right. There is the coolest stuff out your window right now. Don't all look at once. People on the left. We hate the people on the right. purposely flying crooked right now so that they can't see stuff.
9:14, my friend Paula Poundstone's here. The book is called The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. Hold that up so the people at CLTV can see it.
Look at that.
And on Facebook Live as well. You're going to be in Thalia Hall on Monday the 13th. That's the day after Mother's Day, the day that you don't celebrate.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that Monday?
That's not right.
No, it's not Monday.
It's not Monday?
No, it's not Monday.
Well, this is your information.
All right.
Your schedule that you set.
Saturday the 13th.
Yeah.
Okay, it's Saturday. Because I was wondering, you don't do a lot of Monday shows.
Mother-in-law's Day.
Yeah.
No, Saturday the 13th. There are two shows on a Monday. Mm-hmm. That would be insane.
Yeah.
People have to get up and go to work. It's
all right,
Saturday.
So Saturday, May 13th. The Monday shows are even better.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you could get a second show crowd on a Monday night, they would be the hottest crowd in the entire
world.
There's
no question.
Because they would have to be devotees. But as it is, the second show crowd, because I have a show at 10 o'clock, it will be the atheists.
And so we will have
a good time.
Yeah, these are the people that will not be getting up to go to church.
They will not. They will ignore the Lord's Day.
Yes.
I am an atheist. I still go to church. I'm not a heathen. But I am an atheist.
I hate to break it to you. That would make you more of a hobbyist.
Oh, a hobbyist?
Yes.
Oh, you know, that reminds me of the Hobby Lobby, which is where I get my contraception.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. It's
made Have you notified?
Felt and pipe cleaners. It's a kit. You put it together.
Yeah.
But
well, it sounds more like a starter kit, honestly, and possibly painful. All right, now give me one of the places you searched for happiness.
Oh.
From the book.
From
yeah, the book. Yeah, not one you're thinking about now that you didn't include in the book.
The TB word. Let me think. What's the matter with me? Okay, I'll tell you. Let's see. The first chapter is the Get Fit chapter. I did Taekwondo and self-defense for months. grueling workouts. A few days a week I did them. I could do 500 jump ropes.
Wow.
And by the way, that's in a row.
Well, so it's not cumulative.
It's not
over a few months.
That wasn't the self-defense, by the way. You don't have an attacker and then take your jump rope out. That's not going to help.
But what belt? Did you earn a belt then? A Taekwondo belt?
I earned a stick pin. Not a belt.
I did
but
not
a
know
lovely
that. Was...
stick. I earned some dangly earrings. I don't know if I went to a real professional. I think I was a yellow belt or so. I was really low on the totem pole. But anyways, okay. Yeah, I did that. And let me think. What else?
How about the getting organized thing? Because
the getting organized thing was grueling. And you know, I'll tell you. Getting organized is a very popular idea now, and it is grueling. I mean, it's on the cover of women's magazines. It's the new big O.
Really?
Yeah, and you know, people like Oprah are well aware of this. In fact, one of the tools,
is there like a G spot for organization somewhere that you have to find?
Well,
like
I never
found it. Once you're organized,
it.
You'll know where it is.
Yeah. Well, you could certainly hear moaning coming from my house during the organizing.
Right.
In fact, I have two Get Organized chapters.
Oh, you do?
There's part one and part two. No, it was grueling. It was really grueling. It was emotionally wrenching in many ways. Here's just one example. I have had in my, my closet was a disaster, but I have kept my my underwear in the same Foot Locker for 30 years.
Right.
Much of it, by the way, the same underwear.
Right.
I wear a thick high-waisted cottony brief, and it doesn't erode as quickly as some of the stringed things that a lot of women wear.
By the way, normally you would have to say that was out loud, but Paula knows.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, over time, my underwear became the string stuff that you would pay a lot of money for.
Yeah, turned into a thong.
Victoria's Secret, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, so here's what the organizer did. She took it out of the Foot Locker. That alone was enough to, like, make, you know, break a rib for me. It was painful. But she sat at a table where she was sorting, and she would hold each one up. With this look on her face, like, really? Like it was in front of the House of, you know, Un-American Activities or something. and suggest to me that I get rid of it because there was a handful of holes in it. You know,
yeah.
I find that with my thick high-waisted cotton brief, you can get 10 years out of it. Eventually, the elastic goes out, but you can cut it and tie it and still get another couple of good years out of it.
If you're tying off your underwear like a tourniquet, maybe she's not wrong.
You're right.
Well, we got rid of and actually, I finally realized. Well, I can just go out and buy more.
Yes,
yes. And with the savings, what she found in socks was enough save. I mean, she found socks I had long since.
Are you a hoarder? Do you keep things? Do you have something from like your 20s that you know a coat that you wore, a tie that you?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call it hoarding, but no, I do have not. Some. Well, vintage clothing that I made vintage.
Collectibles.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. I was well known in the 80s for wearing big shoulder pads. And let me just say that is a fashion that I joined in, I was fully aware of what I was doing at the time.
Right.
Yeah. It was not coerced by a cult. I did wear large shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And after this organizational purge, I no longer have any garments with big shoulder pads. And I hadn't worn them in years, but they had been in there waiting for that fad to come back. And I supported the fad because it made our heads look smaller.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Boy, I thought that was important.
You should have seen the size of shoulder pads I was trying to find.
Boy, I know,
trying to
right?
make my head look smaller. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that there's this show is done in the window overlooking
Michigan Avenue.
Oh, is that Michigan Avenue?
Yeah, it's Michigan Avenue.
Yeah. It's weird that your main avenue is named after another state.
Well, Lake Michigan is right.
It is true. Oh,
so that would be the key.
Oh, well, that explains that.
Yes.
Boy,
hey, did you know you're
going to
be at Thalia Hall on Saturday now? They moved it for Monday.
Yeah. Thalia Hall on Saturday.
On Saturday.
The 13th. And it's named after the state of Thalia.
You're right.
Right. Right,
this
right.
is an awesome venue in Pilsen, by the way, on 18th Street. You're
it's going to be great.
What's Pilsen? Is that a neighborhood?
Pilsen's primarily a Hispanic neighborhood. Great restaurants, great food, great nightlife.
Oh,
you're going to love it.
That sounds good.
It's going to be great. Yeah. Any of your friends coming along for this show?
I have almost no friends.
But you'll bring the cats, all 14 of them.
I'm bringing two cats so that I don't have to sift as much when I get back home.
Thalia Hall. I love you. It's great to see you. The totally unscientific study of the search for human happiness. By the way, I talked to her publisher and the fine people at Algonquin Books. They say they're already titling the next book, the follow-up, High-Waisted Cottony Briefs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a good
man.
Call.
Yeah. I'm already hard at work. Hard at work on that.
Hi, people. Say hi to Paula. Paula, nice to see you. Have a great time.
Good to see you. Thank you so much. And I totally support the berries and the LifeLock.
Thank you very much. Totally unscientific study for the search for human happiness. Paula Ponce, I'm back next. Crazy short.
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
What?
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 What? What do you feel like doing? What? 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 What do you want to do?
Jam-packed show today. And crazy short on time. And nice to see you, front row, Phyllis. And what are you doing in our neighborhood?
What are we doing?
What are you doing in our neighborhood?
What am I doing? I'm just hanging out.
Oh, I thought you had an appointment or something.
Oh, I do. I got a couple appointments.
Okay.
She's going brief shopping with Paula Poundstone.
For high-waisted cottony briefs. All right, so what are we doing this weekend? Give us a couple ideas.
Well, today happens to be Cinco de Mayo.
That's
right. Right? So big festival for Cinco de Mayo. You want to check out over at Toyota Park in Bridgeview and bring the family, the friends. And it is actually going to have two stages with live music, amazing Mexican dishes, as well as arts and crafts. And there's also a huge carnival.
Oh, nice.
Carnivals are fun.
Cool. Yeah, carnivals are fun. Also, tomorrow is the 19th annual Chicago Kids and Kites Festival. This takes place over at Cricket Hall in Lincoln Park, and it runs from 10 to 4. Admission is free. And what's great is the city of Chicago actually provides kite kits for children to build, decorate, and fly their kites while supplies last. And then this year, new to the event is the Windjammers International. So they're actually going to thrill the crowd with their synchronized kite flying. And they also have a kite pinata that drops from the sky with candy filled.
I haven't flown a kite in, let's say I'm 56, 50 years.
You know what? I bought some kites for my godkids last spring. And they loved it. But
actually, you know what?
Right?
I did a kite when the kids were little.
It's so much fun. But you know what's so cute?
I'm
going to
cut that in half. It's been 25 years since I flew a kite.
There you go. What's cute, though, is that you know how you hold the string?
Yeah.
They didn't realize that you have to hold the string, and they just put it between their fingers, and they just let it go. And they're like, there it goes. I went, no, you're supposed to hold the string.
Yeah.
They don't get that.
They didn't
it's
get
so
upset
cute.
About it leaving?
No, I did because I paid like $6 for each.
Sure, and then you got to go find it because you don't kite litter. Mm-hmm. Stars on Ice coming to town tomorrow?
Stars on Ice tomorrow. Could you believe the Olympics, Winter Olympics, actually are next year in February 2018? So this will give you a chance to see a preview of the U.S. figure skating team. And, of course, Nathan Chen is going to be here, who is the first man to lead in the 5-quadruple jump, which I didn't even know somebody could even do that.
I didn't know you could do that either.
Right?
Well, since you...
Yeah,
right.
But I only did 4.
Right.
Yeah, the 5 is a new number.
Right, exactly. So you get a chance to see them.
We got the cast of My Fair Lady. There are some folks here from the Lyric Opera, so we'll get to those in a little bit. That's another thing going on now through May 21st. But let's jump ahead to the Chicago Botanic Gardens. There's always something going on there.
There always is. And so if you like wine, you definitely want to jump
Dave,
on this. Yep. This
wine.
Yeah, you want to listen up for this one, right? So this is next Thursday on May 11th. It runs from 6 to 8. It's called Grapevines and the Wines.
Yeah.
And you'll get a chance to sample wines from all around the world. See? And some of the participating wineries include Cooper's Hawk, Evanston Cellars, Hess Winery, and plenty more.
Ooh,
yeah.
Sounds good.
Cooper's Hawk is very good.
It is good.
It's a good restaurant.
Really too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yep.
It is.
Yep. Yeah.
And Smokey Robinson, let me tell you something. I've known Smokey for years. Smokey is one of the best guys ever.
Right?
He just has never changed, you know, no matter how much success he had. He was always Smokey.
Yeah.
Where is he playing on Mother's Day?
So he is at the venue at the Horseshoe Casino. I mean, why not take mom and grandma and aunt and everybody to hear Smokey Robinson? So that's going to be a great show, and that is on Sunday on Mother's Day.
Oh, old school Motown. What are you doing for Mother's Day?
You know what? I don't know yet. My kids have not told me.
Is that the way it usually works at Phyllis's house?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Phyllis is going to be cooking.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so you're
probably, right?
You'll be making dinner for them?
Hey, we're coming over. What are you doing for us, Mom?
Exactly.
So, well, happy Mother's Day in advance.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming over.
Thanks.
And I'm sorry it was such a short segment, but, you know, this show is just jam-packed.
I know, you're busy.
Jam-packed. Yeah. Front row, Phyllis, 9:30, back with the big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
By George, he's got it! By George, he's got it! Now, once again, where does it rain?
On the plain.
And where's that soggy?
We are honored to have in studio Richard E. Grant, Henry Higgins, and Lisa O'Hare, Eliza Doolittle, stars of stage and screen in their own homes, where they wander around running lines with friends and neighbors until they are ready for their next work. And this is a big day. This is Richard E. Grant's birthday.
Yeah, happy
birthday.
Birthday.
Happy
yes,
birthday.
Happy birthday.
Pull that right in front of you, sir, if you would. That microphone. And nice to see both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for getting up. I know this is terribly early for the two of you, considering what you do at night.
Not for me.
Come on, really?
Well, I have a baby, so
how old's
the
baby?
Just normal. In fact, this is practically lunchtime for me.
How old's your baby?
She's one. Well, she's 19 months.
19 months. Aww. My first grandchild, 16 months.
Oh.
19 months is great, right?
It's a great age.
At first?
My first, yes.
And you said a little girl?
She's a little girl.
What's her name?
CL.
CL? Where does it come from?
Oh, it's a long story.
It's a very pretty name.
It's French. I met somebody with that name who told me I was going to have a child.
Really?
A girl born in September, and she was, so I named her after Ciel.
So it was a French psychic?
Well, yes, kind of.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes.
So do you love being a mom?
I do. I love it more than anything.
And is she as dramatic around the house? Is she, you know,
she's
you must
dramatic.
Sing around the house, right? I assume you sing?
I don't really.
Really?
I know, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, considering what you do for
I sing a lot at work and I go home and I don't really sing. My husband does all the singing in our house and he is completely tone deaf.
Is he not in the business, as we call it?
He is. He's in the business. He's a sound engineer.
And yet he's tone deaf. How terribly sad.
Completely tone deaf sound engineer. I know, it's hilarious.
Yeah, so sad.
So.
Yet you love him still.
I do.
Yes. Notice how we didn't make any of this about your birthday?
Right.
Yeah, I'm very glad, because I'm married to a speech teacher.
Is that right?
Yeah, it taught me, you know, phonetics. So it's ironic that I'm now playing Henry Higgins, who is a phonetician all these years later. So,
boy, you talk about getting notes at home, huh?
Oh, to believe me, chapter and verse of it.
Right. Yeah. Now, had you ever played Henry Higgins?
I did 10 years ago at the Sydney Opera.
How is this take different?
This one has the great wonder of working with Lisa O'Hare. So that's the bonus.
Well, it's very sweet.
Very easy I know to fall in love with her on a daily basis.
I bet. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Now, there's a transition, of course, that goes on in the classic rendering of the play where you're not a very pleasant person to Eliza, but then there's a transition. What do you where do you go to get that transition? Because you seem like a terribly pleasant human being.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, he's very, you know, Higgins is almost scientific in the way that he approaches everything. So she's almost like Eliza's like a lab specimen. And so he doesn't really care for her feelings until he realizes that he has feelings for her. And then it's almost too late.
Until her beauty and her talent break you down.
Exactly right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you two like each other in general?
Yeah, we like each other okay, don't we, Richard?
Yeah, I think it's okay. It's about moving.
By the way, I got to tell you something. The fake British accents are really impressive,
I know,
don't
right?
you think?
I know.
We're doing really well for this time in the morning.
Can you listen to you talk all day? Do you ever still, I mean, you're in the roles of a lifetime and Shining and rave reviews. Do you ever get nervous? Is there ever a point where before you step on stage you think...
Yeah, butterflies.
Yeah, honestly, if I don't get nervous, that's worrying for me.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like it when I walk on stage with not an ounce of nerves. And it rarely happens, but when it does, I think, ooh, we're not in for a very good show. Because if you don't feel any adrenaline, it's disturbing.
You're not in the moment, right?
Yeah, and it that's what gets you through, is that adrenaline. I mean, nerves are very much part of it, and you learn to deal with them.
Do you two have a particular warm-up routine you do? Because if you have ever been to, say... building filled with mental patients. It's quite similar to backstage with actors. Right before they go on, there's mumbling, there's screaming, there's singing of weird things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly what happens.
Yes.
Yeah, you've just described it absolutely perfectly.
And in our white set, we just look like we're in a mental institution, don't we?
Mumbling
and lip trilling.
But is it something, I've always found that actors have something that they had maybe early on from a teacher or something someone else taught them, and it's just their thing. Before they go out and do it, do you have a thing?
Yes, I do a handstand.
A handstand?
Yeah. Do you really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Sends all the blood to your head, and you can't think of anything else other than trying to stay upright. And
I love that. The producers of the show just went into a full panic.
No.
Especially as I'm so ancient.
So the handstand, you do it in your dressing room, and then you come out?
Yeah.
Exactly. So what happens if you have that awkward moment where someone's in the dressing room too long and it's right before handstand time? Do you shoo them away?
Oh, I'm too old to care. I'll just do it anyway.
Lisa, will you do anything for his birthday? Do you guys do anything?
Well, I don't know. He's very difficult to buy for. Uh-huh. I found myself last night going, what can I get Richard for his birthday? Because he doesn't like chocolate. He doesn't drink alcohol. He doesn't like a lot of things that I would normally buy someone for their birthday. So I'm
Oh, he's got a lovely scarf.
Still thinking.
What about a scarf?
I don't know.
You don't need to give me anything. Your performance is a gift in itself on a daily basis. Absolutely.
So, sweet.
So charming.
I know. Boy.
It's true.
Can you come in every day and just talk to us? Just talk to me.
It's really magic. Stay around 1 second. By the way, if you want tickets, and you should, lyricopera.org, go there and make sure you see these two great talents in this run before it's gone. And moves on. You're going to take mom?
Yeah, I'm taking my mom on Mother's Day. It only runs through May 21st, but to see this performance, it was so highly anticipated at the Lyric Opera. It's just magnificent. So I would highly encourage everybody to see it.
Again, lyricopera.org. And it's your birthday. Don't move. We'll come back to more in a second at 720 WGN. Amazingly, that's Richard. Yeah. That's how versatile he is as a talent.
Yeah.
That was Tight Pants Night.
In
studio, Richard E. Grant plays Henry Higgins, and Lisa O'Hara plays Eliza Doolittle. And again, it is My Fair Lady at the Lyric, lyricopera.org. You guys have both done a lot of work in your day and a lot of TV, too. And TV is really, 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 really terrible on a broadcast network level. But tremendous in all the various factions that have split off, the Amazon shows, the Hulu shows, the other shows, you know, and HBO and Showtime are doing great stuff. Do you aspire to one of those great, cool, short-run series?
Yes, why not? Because you get lots of money, and yeah, they're very good. So
but don't they look like fun too, right?
Yeah, I had four episodes on the Game of Thrones, which was extremely enjoyable and very well paid for one of those channels. So
tell me about standing around on the set of Game of Thrones. Do you mm-hmm. just randomly pick out someone, you whack them over the head with one of those crazy British axes? What do you do?
Yes, you do. That's exactly I couldn't put it better. Yeah, could not do that description.
Because there's a lot of standing around on a movie set or a TV set. You got to fill the time somehow, so kill an extra.
Yeah, kill an extra and count how much you've earned standing around.
Right.
How much different is that from the set of Girls, which we shouldn't tell Nick DiGilio, by the way, because our overnight host is a huge Girls fan.
Oh,
how
Girls,
different?
I had a very enjoyable time because I had to jump Miss Kirkland, who is my daughter's age, so to legitimately take cocaine and jump a young woman was it was sort of TV Viagra.
And to do it without any charges.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And also, Lisa, you were on one of my favorite shows that had too short a run in Castle, right? Did you do a Castle?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did a guest shot in Castle. It was really, really fun. In fact, that was the first thing I ever did on TV. So I
that would be an exception to my all broadcast TV sucks right now. Because it was good. It was good.
It was a good show.
Yeah.
And I had to play a burlesque bar owner where I stripped. So it was a bit terrifying on set, actually. But
it was on YouTube.
I had a really great time in the end. Have you seen it?
I'm going to.
Yes. I just want you to know, out of respect for you, I turned away during that scene.
Did you?
Yes.
Good for you.
Yes. But I really want everybody to see you guys in My Fair Lady.
Thank you.
Because even though My Fair Lady has been around for a long time, every great talent brings their own individual take to it. And you have such great chemistry just off the air. It's quite annoying.
Annoying.
Yeah.
We're having an amazing time.
She's pregnant with my twins.
At least one of them.
Now we know what you were doing when Game of Thrones was between scenes.
At least one is yours, right, Richard?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Last question.
I just want to, again, everybody should see this. It looks magical. What do you think is the secret of the success for this musical? It has spanned generations. It never gets old, whether you see it for the first time or maybe the 10th time.
It's a great point.
Cinderella story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You started with somebody who has from the wrong side of the social tracks, who is completely transformed by changing the way she speaks, and it's almost like the story of the American Dream in one show, where somebody who literally arrives with nothing and then is transformed and wins the lottery by the end.
Yeah, I also think it's a really empowering story for women, for young women. We had a student matinee the other day, and it was really moving. Their response to it was really moving,
yeah.
Because she's completely empowered by the end, and I think
when you kick my butt, they
cheer.
Yeah,
they just love it, and absolutely. I think it's a really good thing for young women right now. So I think that's why it's particularly current. So.
And if your own little girl grows up and wants to be an actress, what are you going to tell her?
Oh boy, I would have to be thing she wanted to do in the world. Otherwise, I would try and discourage it.
It's hard. It's hard.
It's hard. It's wonderful. It's that I feel very blessed, but I have no other talents. None.
Oh, I mean, you sell yourself short.
No,
look
no
you,
I do. I really don't. Ask my husband.
Dance,
no. I can't
well
do anything else.
Yeah. No, we can't ask him. He's tone deaf. We're not going to ask him.
Yeah, look at that way. You married a man for charity.
Yeah.
I mean, you did that. That was sweet of you. That was very sweet of you. Great to see
you
both. And honor to have you in the studio. The great Richard E. Grant and Lisa O'Hare. And happy birthday, sir.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday.
And I want you to know you don't look a day over 39. lyricopera.org. Get your tickets for The Gone. Bill and Wendy next.